Welcome to PharmaTalk Radio. This podcast is about leveraging sustainability, including ESG, to empower patient engagement goals in medicine development from the 2024 Patients as Partners in Clinical Research Conference. For more information about the Patients as Partners Conference, editorial, podcast, or webcast, you can visit patientsaspartners.org. Thank you and enjoy the podcast.
Good morning, everybody. So we have a kind of new topic when it comes to patient engagement, and that's the whole investors working with patients to secure the investments, to work for it, but also the ESG discussion, ESG standing for environment, social, and governance. So we'll come and discuss about that. I will set the scene for 5 minutes, and then we'll open the discussion and bring different perspective and some totally new perspective to patient engagement. So before we get started, I just wanted to do a little test about where do you think the investors community is when it comes to patient engagement. So I would like everybody to have hands up. Everybody hands up. More hands. I'm waiting that all hands are up. More. Even more. Some people are. Okay. So you keep your hands up until you think that's not true anymore. So when we talk about the proportion of investors that have adopted patient engagement in their day-to-day work to manage a fund or any type of investment they would do, how much do you think are innovators? If you agree that there are at least the innovators on board, you keep your hands up. So we have some investors doing patient engagement. How much do you think that we also have the early adopters that have adopted patient engagement? Okay, you think a lot of people think we have early adopters on board already. How much for the early majority? Okay, everybody has, I think I see 2 hands, 3. Okay, so let's see what's the reality of that and discuss about that together for the next 30 minutes. So I'll go on explaining a little bit why do we talk about that today, and then we'll go with the panelists. So we will discuss what's the link between investments, patient engagement, and ESG. We will discuss about what's the implication on pharma companies or medtech companies. We will take a look from an investor perspective. And finally, we'll look at what it means next. So that's a slide that's not really new, or at least the information on the slide is not really new, and that's a summary of what are the benefits or the return of investment of patient engagement. So it ranges from the shorter recruitment time, shorter clinical trial altogether, improved chance to get approval at the regulatory level, and net present value increased. And so all of these are actually the benefit of patient engagement. And the data exists for a little while, but what we have seen compared to last year at the same time in this conference is that some companies have started to apply that to their own portfolio. And then starts really when they put the numbers within their own context on their own molecules and on their own portfolios, actually the patient engagement team have been able to really report huge return on investment for the work that they do as a patient engagement team. And so that's the whole angle of working on it for the benefit of the one organization. Now, why do we talk about ESG? And so, as a reminder, ESG stands for environment, social, and governance. It's because, and we have talked about sustainability, CSR, and things like that for a very long time, but things are changing, and because of the urge of climate change, and we will discuss today whether you believe in it or not is not the question anymore. I'll come back to that in a minute. But so what's happening is because of the urge of climate change, in Europe there is a new directive. And the glossy paper saying how great you are from a societal point of view will not be enough anymore, and it has started already. Actually, you need to be able to set targets, measurable targets, and actually report about it. And so it will legally be binding for the organization that make these commitments and that has started already for the biggest organization. You see a European flag, so it looks it might be only European, but actually the US people are already preparing for that. So any company doing business in Europe anyway will have to apply this, but actually it's also true for the US. So when I come back to the slide that we were doing a bit earlier, it's obvious that we have been building the data from one angle only, but of course, shorter clinical trial, more efficient clinical trials and research, better targeted investments, better return on investment for the organization. It's also, there's always the patient engagement value out of that. What's true for a molecule faster to the market? What it becomes when it's a whole pipeline and the whole research, globally speaking, that is faster to market with better product, better fit for purpose. So clearly, the value of patient engagement is also not only for the organization in the context where the organization is under pressure. We will talk about IRA in the US putting huge pressure on companies and patient engagement being part of the solution. But it's not only for the organization. It's also like each time when you aggregate this information at the societal level, it's a benefit for society. And so I will finish to set the scene part of this presentation with this slide. So what is EAG basically? Like most companies do the exercise of double materiality matrix. And so in the past, you will have the horizontal axis only focusing on what's good for the organization, and when it comes to ESG, actually, what's good for the organization and for society. And moving forward, both will have to be looked at together, and only if you have top right of this chart, actually, this is an activity that the organization should run. If you are too much on the right or the bottom, it's actually serving the organization but not society, and on the other way around, if you're on the left side, very strong on the left and high, actually it's serving society but not the organization. And so our proposition here today is that one of the most top right activity of all will be patient engagement. Why? Because patient engagement, when you do it, it's an investment, of course, but the investment is driving return on investment. Other activities like reducing CO2 emissions, reducing packaging, that's actually a very important thing to do, but that will be a cost to put that in place. And there will be no return on investment. There will be a return for society, but not for the organization. So patient engagement is one of the only solutions on how to move forward to, at the same time, create benefit for society and for the organization. Short-term benefits, and I've mentioned the time to market, the clinical trial time and so on, the long-term benefit for the organizations, because the organization is more sustainable with wiser investments, stronger products on the market, and long-term impact on society. That's it for the set the scene. I will pass the mic to my colleagues here, and I will start we found an investor who is doing patient engagement. And so we have a kind of unicorn with us today. It's Gunnar. So Gunnar, thank you for being here. It's really interesting. I think many of you might know him. He's a patient advocate, but he's also one of the first leader in a fund, and I will let you explain a bit more, who is actually running patient engagement. So Gunnar, can you tell us a bit more like why, so who you are, and why your organization made the choice to run patient engagement and what you are doing every day?
Yeah, thanks, Nicholas. So hi, everyone. My name is Gunnar Asayas, and I'm a patient advocate living with cystic fibrosis. And about 10 years ago, I was on the verge of end-stage cystic fibrosis to the point where my physician told me that we were running out of treatment options. My only path forward was to put myself into different clinical trial programs. So over the last 10 years, I've spent more time as a clinical trial participant than not as one, for better or worse. And I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly from the inside of different clinical trials. Right? That first trial that I was in about 10 years ago, it was painfully obvious to me that no one had ever asked a sick person if the protocol made sense. Right? I mean, how many people in here can have seen that happen? Right? It is a problem across the industry. If you know anything about CF, we had a major home run 4 or 5 years ago that's basically transformed the disease. You can look at me. I'm obviously no longer the verge of end-stage illness. But during that time, I learned a lot about the industry, a lot about biotech, a lot about the mechanics of the industry, how it's moving forward. And so that's what led me to the venture capital world, where I now am the head of patient engagement within our firm's venture fund, RA Ventures. We're a large multi-asset stage investor. At about any one time, we work with about 100 companies that are clinical stage, so very small, medium-sized biotech companies is like really our bread and butter. And what we think is there's a competitive advantage for our small companies that are vastly under-resourced to actually embed more closely with patient communities. And we've seen that competitive advantage shine through in different clinical stage programs, right? Whether that's influencing and enhancing the protocols all the way through how we're actually communicating and talking about the drugs that we're working with. It's no surprise that right now is a very exciting time in biotech and biopharma. The technologies that are coming down the pipeline and coming out of academia are some of the most amazing that you could possibly imagine. And sometimes it feels a little bit like science fiction to sort of see what's out there. But at the end of the day, right, we're trying to develop drugs that we want people to end up using that will hopefully change their lives, right? I think about the clinical trial ecosystem, really, as a problem of resource allocation from a patient perspective, right? So I'll take my sort of like investor hat off and then put my patient advocate hat on. And really my incentive when I look at clinical trials broadly across the cystic fibrosis continuum is I want patients to be in clinical trial programs that have the greatest chance of success and also moving the needle forward, right? I don't want patients to go into a program that's going to fail operationally or technologically, right? Because that's a waste of time. It's a waste of resources for patients in a rare disease like CF that could be elsewhere contributing to the betterment of the disease. So that's some of the kind of questions that we're trying to answer. And the only way you're going to get to those answers for our companies is actually working with the patients from the outset, earlier than you could possibly, earlier than industry has otherwise historically operated, at least from the small biotech side. So that's kind of what I do, what I work on. And it's been a fun, exciting ride for the last couple of months. And we're still very much piloting sort of how we engage with patients. So here today to learn from some of the best practices that are out there, but hopefully also influence the next generation of small biotech.
Maybe one quick question, so we come back to the adoption curve here. Like, what would be your answers? Where are we on the adoption curve in the investment community?
Yeah, I would say that I think from large institutional investors, it's basically non-existent. I think where patient engagement does exist in the investment world is actually on the nonprofit organizational level. Right? You'll see venture philanthropy funds, right, like the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, like the JDRF, that have their own for-profit investment arms that are materially changing and making impact within the diseases that they serve.
Thank you. Susan, because we have been... As a patient advocate at the NHC, you have been working with regulators, with policymakers, and so on. And so, like, what's the work you've been doing and how it relates to the investment community? So maybe can you tell us a bit more about you, what you have been doing, and how you see the next steps in advocating towards the investment community?
Sure. So at National Health Council, what we do is really convene all the different stakeholders in the health ecosystem around the common purpose of making sure that patients are at the table in making decisions that affect their care. So that has a lot to do with patient engagement, as you might imagine. And I know many of you in the room know NHC from your own participation. So we thank you for that. There's two things that are most important to patients from our perspective, and that's access and affordability. Innovation is obviously really important, but if you are living with a disease already, you need to have access to that medicine, and it needs to be affordable. And once you are stabilized with those things covered, what you want is something more, something better that's going to affect your disease state in a way that makes your life more livable. And so I think a mistake or an omission that we often see is not involving patients and the patient advocacy community early enough. And I think that's where it really connects to the investment conversation, that there tends to be an inclination that once the science is further along and there feels like, oh, we have something promising here, or even later when you get to the stage where you're sort of pre-launch, like, oh, we have something. And that tends to be where a lot of folks begin to involve patients. And at that point, it's valuable, but so much opportunity has been lost at that point. Many years ago, I worked with a doctor who said the only expert in disease is the patient, and that it's the doctor's job to translate what the patient knows into what it means. The patient knows what's going on, but they don't necessarily know what it means. And what it means is where the science comes in. So there is no time that's too early to bring patients to the conversation. And an example, I think, of when that doesn't go right was last year at an event that we hold annually, our Science of Patient Engagement Symposium. We have patients who serve as moderators, much like you do here, on our panels. And we had a woman living with diabetes who told a story that we didn't anticipate. She hadn't told it to us before, that she wears an insulin pump. And she's an African-American woman, and most insulin pumps are black or gray, dark in color. And she lives in fear of a traffic stop and having something bulky and dark-colored under her clothes that she may have to reach for when she's engaging with a law enforcement officer. And her observation in that was, it was clear to her that patients and a diversity of patients with different life experiences were not at the table in the development of that kind of a device which is essential to her being able to live and operate. But that's a simple design choice that could be made different to make that intervention much better for that patient. And so I guess my key message from what we do is early, very early, even at the investor stage. Make sure that that investors are targeting their resources towards innovators who really understand the patient experience because they have it involved at the beginning stages. And I know many of you represent organizations that have intimate involvement in the regulatory environment, which is pretty challenging right now in the U.S., I think, for industry. And we're doing a lot of work around that middle piece between you all as the innovators and the science side, and with the patients as the sort of end user. The infrastructure in the regulatory environment needs to be built so that patients, the work that you do with patients, and the patient perspective with regulators in the government through things like IRA, at the FDA, all the way through the system, are really highly valued and highly considered so that the innovations that you all bring to bear actually have a pathway to the end of the line and getting to patients, and that your investment in patients from the beginning pays off for that resource-intensive work that you do that holds the promise and the hope that we're all looking for.
Thank you very much. And if I ask you the same question from your perspective in NHC, where are we in terms of adoption on the curve? What have you seen so far or not seen so far?
I would say we haven't seen a lot so far. So I'd say we're pretty early. But that, because I think Dr. Wei talked this morning about, we're all people, we're all patients, we all understand on a very fundamental level that it's important to understand these things. And I think that ESG holds the promise of bringing that to the forefront. I think it gets muddled in bureaucracy and process and procedure, but if we can allow our full selves to come to work and recognize ourselves, the patient and the caregiver in us and in our own families, and prioritize that, that's the secret sauce of the healthcare industry, is being able to bring that forward and really lift that up as important. So I think there's a lot of room for growth, and if we just sort of tap into that personal level, understanding, common sense that we have, we can do a lot more.
Thank you very much. Rebecca, so huge impacts on industry, the ESG changes and paradigm shifts. it's sometimes difficult from the outside, I think, to appreciate how big is the change within the pharma companies. So can you tell us a bit more about that, like from your Roche perspective, but also from what you know, you are very well connected to your peers in patient affairs in other companies. So what's the impact on the organization and how do you plug patient engagement in this discussion?
Yeah, so thanks, Nicholas. Rebecca, super excited to be here, let me just say that, and to share some perspective with everyone who I'm looking forward to engaging in conversations with, because I want to be very clear that this is a real opportunity for the industry to come together and really think holistically about the contributions that we bring to society. That is huge. And the difference that we can make by coming together to do that with patients just amplifies the impact that we can have to shift the systems that we see around us that we know are fragmented, that we know is not working for patients today. And so from my perspective, I see it as a huge opportunity, and I would say from a company perspective, so I'll bring the view of a company, like, let's get down to business. This matters. It helps us shift our thinking as a company from thinking about the inside-out perspective of we have products in our pipeline that we want to push out and launch into a system that is broken, that people need to be convinced, payers, patients, communities to utilize products and solutions, to a frame that represents, oh, outside in. Let's think about what can actually make the biggest impact for people and society, as you represented on your previous slide, Nicholas. It's about understanding where value can be differentiated. And you mentioned it, Gunnar. It's a competitive advantage. That's a huge shift. And you cannot think about societal contributions without engaging people as patients with lived experience. So it's a huge opportunity for us. It's a huge opportunity for those that are leading and leading efforts to engage with patient communities to bring them into these conversations. As we're looking at our portfolio, as we're evaluating our programs, as we're thinking about the types of integrated solutions that are going to really make a difference, it's through that lens that we need to be making decisions. And I think it's a huge opportunity for us in the what is going to bring most value to people as patients in society and to our business, and how do we capture that value so that it can be reflected as a part of our sustainability goals. And for investors, those that are paying attention to those companies that are really doing that well and right, you know what? It's going to be a really smart investment. Because you can be pretty assured that investing in those companies who are engaging in that way, that you're going to get a return for that effort. That's my perspective.
And where are we on the adoption curve from your point of view?
I would say on the adoption, like most people, I think we're early in. I would say some investors are getting pretty smart. I think they're cluing in to these types of conversations. So my sense is on the investor side, there's more and more interest and engagement about this. I would say from my perspective of having conversations with my sustainability partners and open to others' experiences as well, they too are early adopters, but the conversations are even maybe a little bit earlier on. I mean, most of the reaction I get in these conversations are, I hadn't thought about that. Like, myself as a sustainability team that have pretty much for the most part been thinking about environment, right, governance. Yes, the society that's out there, we do a lot for society. We think about what we do for society. But now you flip it and you say, whoa, I didn't think about what we're actually contributing and doing with society and how I can represent that. So it's elevating the whole conversation for our sustainability partners as well to recognize their importance in this conversation. And by being able to document it and actually represent these activities that we're doing in a way that can be measured, they're helping us as a company and our corporate reputation. So once that light bulb goes off, it's a pretty positive discussion. It's an aha moment. It is definitely an aha moment.
And in the preparation for this panel, you mentioned that we were looking at the chart with the two axes, and you were mentioning, like, from my perspective, I have three axes, and I had the patient one as a third dimension. Do you want to develop a little bit on that?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've really thought about as a part of the patient partnership team is looking for that trifecta. I think we can all appreciate there's lots of things we can and want to do with patients to support them on, you know, their experiences and to help navigate their healthcare. The opportunity for us is really framing that in a way that we understand what our patient needs that directly correlate to society, right, that you have. So what of those are going to have the greatest impact in society to help enable the change that the patient need wants? And then from a business perspective, that it's also an opportunity for us as a company from a business. And it's helping us prioritize where do we give our time? Where do we look for funding and investment to do the things that we want to do if we can put it in a frame to say there's value for patients, there's value for society, and there's going to be value for our business that can be measured in this way and really helping us flip that switch on societal value and the longer-term impact that we want to see.
Thank you very much. So we are well on time, which is fantastic. So you can start to come to the mic with your questions, if you have questions. In the meantime, I wanted to develop, the whole story of ESG, and that's something why in PFMD and with our partners, we are actually investing in that dimension. We feel that after working, the whole work with the regulators across the globe to bring patients at the table and so on, we feel like maybe investors are the next leverage point, the key leverage points to move forward. And so that's why we're investing, and the more we talk with them, actually, the reception about our message is really, really positive. So you heard about how to make smart investment efficient for the investors, both investors and the patients. You hear how strategic it is for pharma companies as well. We have case studies now on our website that also explain that certain patients on advisory board for investors actually saved hundreds of millions sometimes to avoid some wrong investments moving forward. So that's really the number of case studies are growing. So it's really something important, and we believe that in PFMD and with our partners that actually that will be one of the key next leverage points to bring patient engagement to the next level. So that's I wanted to complement with that last example. Please.
So thanks for the panel. I recall that we had this conversation at last year's meeting. It seems like the term ESG is not being used as much now. It's really more impact, essentially the same components, however. But my question was really for Gunnar. And that is, in my experience, big companies, big pharma companies are all in on this impact. You know, they're publishing impact reports, which include the patient engagement work they're doing. Where the real gap is in small biotech, because they're concerned about the science, and is the science moving forward, and do we have enough money to keep the lights on and move to the next milestone? So I'd love to hear what you are finding is resonating with them and your venture fund to fund these small biotech, because I think the big opportunity for all of us here is how do we get patient engagement into biotech?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think, personally, I've seen over the last 5, 6, 7 years, patient engagement efforts have really kind of exploded on the big pharma stage. I mean, like, must be nice to have an unlimited R&D budget. and that's where resources are going, right? Which I think tells me and should tell most people in this room that there is real value found and investing in those operational functions within those businesses. On the small biotech world, it's just a completely different dynamic, right? We look at things. I sit in a clinical operations team is really where I am. So we look at things through the lens of sort of operational tie-ups across the clinical trial ecosystem. And oftentimes at these small biotech companies, it's really just one or two people running the show. And these people are like under nightmarish pressure from dealing with CROs, from dealing with vendors, and it's just a complete nightmare for these people. Just like you can't even imagine the stress and pressure that they are under. Not to mention the sites on the other end too, right? Like I firmly believe the most important person in the entire biotech industry is the clinical research coordinator, like the person in the room with the patient dosing the study drug. Like not a more important person in the world than that person. And the reality is because those ClinOps people are so heads down, they're in the weeds, they're running these, you know, tens of millions of dollars worth of trial infrastructure by themselves oftentimes, there's just no time for them to sort of support traditional patient engagement and advocacy functions like a big pharma company can. And that's what we're seeing, right? So the question is, how do you support that person without giving them, you know, another vendor, like a 500th vendor for them to manage and deal with, and really make sure that they're bringing the patient voice inside the company? Because that's what patients care about, right? Patients care about two things. One, who's in the room with them dosing the study drug? Do I trust that person? Do I trust that PI? Do I trust that research coordinator? And then two, do I trust the sponsor that's actually making the drug? Right, before I enrolled my first clinical trial 10 years ago, right, I read Sally Smith Hughes' book about Genentech, the beginning of Genentech, the beginning of biotech. I read The Antidote about the story of Vertex. Right, those are books that I read to convince myself that I could trust the industry, that they had my best interest in mind. And that's what small biotech really needs to do a better job of.
And I'll just represent, you know, it's been interesting to me. I've had a few investors in the community reach out to me to say, we recognize the importance of this role and the perspective for just exactly what you're saying, smaller biotech companies, you know, and their willingness to actually invest people with that expertise to come and sit down and work with those companies to help ensure they are pausing and incorporating that perspective, because again, it's a part of the investment value.
And I'll just quickly say that we have seen in the past couple of years sort of movement from big pharma to small biotechs in terms of small biotechs bringing on folks that have patient engagement experience. What we're hearing from the folks who are doing that work is what Gunnar is saying, is that there's so much pressure and there's to produce and to show that the science is making its way along that trajectory that they don't have the attention span necessarily for the patient engagement piece, that it's really hard to make that marriage for them. So I think more attention, giving them the breathing room to actually be able to adopt this kind of stuff into what they're doing has to come from the actors around them.
Although even in big pharma, we're still swimming like a salmon swimming upstream, right? It isn't a piece of cake. We all appreciate that too. I think bringing that patient perspective in is still a mindset shift that needs to happen. Anyway,
do we have time for one more?
We have time.
Okay. Hi, Jean Spisaro from Bristol-Myers Squibb. I think I've listened to everything you said. I'm so thrilled to hear your passion around it because we are being challenged, big pharma, small biotech, to do more with less quicker because patients are waiting. And so I would challenge anyone working in patient engagement in big pharma to say that they aren't being challenged really, really more and more now, more than ever. So the concepts around environmental sustainability in drug development is something that I've started to really embrace internally. I finally was given the opportunity to respond on behalf of our organization, and what are we doing? And they will come back and they will measure. And I've had the same aha moments. People were like, I never thought about that. So the value coming from the customer, the patient, is now starting to resonate more internally. And I would implore all of you, if given the opportunity, to use this sustainability concept to keep the momentum going, because we're going to need it. We're going to be challenged more and more. So thank you more than anything. I'm really thrilled.
Thank you. There's a question there.
Thank you very much. Great panel, really wonderful discussion. I come from the device sector, and my question is, a lot of the people who are developing in the device sector are small companies, they're startups. Wondering from a strategic acquisition perspective in the drug space, have you seen that the strategics are looking at acquisitions of companies that have taken that patient experience and the patient engagement elements into their clinical trials? Does that help de-risk it and make it more likely for those companies to get acquired? And if there's any lessons or thoughts you could share on that.
I guess that's me. So we do have a small health tech and services team. I do not sit on it, so I don't have the exact line of sight into them. But it's what I would say is patient-centered product development, whether in biotech or device, is crucial, right? I'll tell a quick anecdote. Again, this is drug. That's the world I come from. Of a drug that was launched into the CF world about 15, 20 years ago almost, about 20 years ago almost, called Casein. Casein is a nebulized antibiotic called Atrium. And at the time, the cystic fibrosis care routine was done twice daily. So there was an hour and a half of nebulizers in the morning, an hour and a half of nebulizers in the afternoon before you went to bed. I mean, like, you're just sitting there all day doing a nebulizer, right? Like, that's like the old school cystic fibrosis way of doing things. Now it's very different. But at the time, the cornerstone, and Genentech makes one of those products, by the way. I've been a loyal user for 30 years. One of the products was a 25-minute nebulized antibiotic called Tobi. And Casein was sort of a competitor to Tobi, and it was pitched as being a 2-minute drug versus a 25-minute Tobi nebulization. And you would think for patients that are sitting, you know, tied to a nebulizer for 3 hours a day, this would be a huge step forward. But when the drug was launched, it was launched with the caveat that it was delivered 3 times a day, not twice a day. At the time, most people with cystic fibrosis were under the age of 18. So that means we were in school, we were in high school, we were playing sports, we were doing all these things. Who the heck has time to do a nebulizer in the middle of the school day? I certainly did. My preference was for the longer drug to continue sitting there with my, you know, 3-hour treatment routine rather than take on this new, fast, easy, sleek, sexy drug that, you know, ran clinical trials, it was launched to fanfare, and then they had to go back and figure out how to make it more patient-centric. So the moral of this story is that, yes, like, that really does matter.
And I'll just add very quickly, last year was the first year working with our sustainability partners that we had patients actually participate as a part of our materiality assessments. And in doing so, to highlight what was most important and relevant for the societal contributions, the number one thing, so there were three things. The number one, health and well-being. And you think about, oh yeah, of course, health and well-being. It means that, you know, early detection, prevention, diagnosis, and maintaining overall health in a quality way is needed. And I think that's the true opportunity for med tech beyond pharma and what we think about for pharmaceuticals, to think about how do we work together elevating this conversation and the important role that patients play in the acceptance of those solutions, right? It's just essential. It just has to happen that way.
Right. You're exactly right. Like, the solution to the problem that existed that I just described would have been to ask a high school patient with CF, would you do this drug? Like, a simple market research question. That was completely overlooked.
Right. And you have to understand the therapeutic area and the people in that area in order to use the innovation and the science in a way that deploys towards their needs. And missing that step is costly in time and resources, and can so easily be incorporated to change that trajectory. And I think, Rebecca, what you're pointing out is how much it makes an impact on the pressures that industry is under.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your insights, and well said.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. For more information on the Patients as Partners Conference, editorial, podcasts, or webcasts, you can visit patientsaspartners.org. Thank you for listening.